Welcome to Season 8, Episode 41 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday the 15th of December, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and in the community. I'm Mark, and joining me this week are Alan.
Oh my gosh, hello.
Martin.
Hello.
And back from her travels, Laura.
Hiya.
You don't sound too jet-lagged.
No, it's weird.
Oh dear, could things suddenly take a turn for the worse during the show?
Yeah, I've got a glass of wine and an hour and a half sleep, so
we're
good.
Maybe we should get on with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And now it's time for some news. Mark.
First up, Let's Encrypt has entered public beta, which means invitations are no longer needed in order to get free certificates from Let's Encrypt. So Let's Encrypt is a free service for generating SSL certificates or TLS certificates or whatever they're properly called, but certificates for allowing you to run websites over HTTPS.
Okay. How is this different from CA Cert?
CA Cert isn't trusted in any of the browsers, and Let's Encrypt is. And also, Let's Encrypt is fully automated. You don't actually have to... it doesn't verify you as a person. It verifies that your server has a particular domain pointing to it and therefore will issue your server a certificate for that domain. It doesn't go any further than that, but that's enough to get you a certificate without any money or human interaction.
So when you say it's fully automated, my question is it? I mean, what?
Right. So you download the client and you run a command passing it. It currently works with, I think, Nginx and Apache. You pass it the server you want it to set up and the domain you want it to give you a certificate for. And it does it and configures your server. And then you can basically set a cron job. So the certificates last for 90 days and they say they expect people to renew them around every 60 days. So you can then set a cron job, which runs every 60 days and just generates you a new certificate.
Hmm. Huh. But do you have to use Apache or can you
use something else, but then you have to do the server configuration bit yourself. It'll generate the certificates and stick them in a folder for you. And then you'd have to set up your other web server of choice to use those certificates and keys.
Is there any reason not to use this?
I'm still looking for one.
So I've got one. Well, I've got a server that is running a web server software that isn't supported. And so it will not be the fully automatic thing. Every 90 days I will.
Well, not necessarily, because you could... Oh, well, no, okay. So you'd have to...
do some work.
Well, I'm just trying to think what work you'd have to do.
And
yeah, you could write a plugin for your
changes,
web server.
Yeah, and then commit those back and solve everybody's problems.
Yeah, I think I'll probably just switch to Apache, to be honest.
Or it does Nginx as well at the moment. And I expect other popular web servers
I'm sure
will
those
have
come
plugins
course,
very soon.
Yeah. You got two reference plugins, awesome. Yeah. And Remy Van Elst emailed us for a command line love, but what he's actually created here is a simple tool to monitor the expiration of certificates. And it's been quite popular and it's been covered on Reddit and InfoSec forums and also in the online press. And if you go to https://certificatemonitor.org, you can actually set up an alert and it'll email you when your certificates are about to expire. So if you don't have a server that is automatically configured by Let's Encrypt, it will alert you ahead of time and you can go in and make the necessary requests to get a new certificate.
Cool.
Nice.
Another thing it does actually, not Remy's tool, but Let's Encrypt itself, is it can... it gives you the option, you can actually configure your web server whether just to install the certificate and enable it or whether to force all traffic to go via HTTPS as well. So it'll put in the redirects that it needs to do that, which is clever.
Huh. Nice. So are there any like embedded devices that won't have a certificate for Let's Encrypt?
Let's Encrypt certificate is signed by a root certificate, which is trusted on well, they say all major platforms, basically. So you're likely that if it supports HTTPS certificates in general, it'll support Let's Encrypt.
Cool. Groovy. Moving on, Mozilla will stop developing and selling Firefox OS smartphones. They announced at the recent Sprint event that they had in Orlando, I think called Mozlando.
Well, I'm sure all of the developers who went along to that were thrilled to hear that the platform they were developing for is being abandoned.
I suspect, well, no, I think this was an internal Mozilla event, and so I suspect many of them already knew some of this, had an inkling, but it was kind of announced there that there was a strategic change in direction for Mozilla.
But Alan, aren't Firefox and Mozilla going to focus on technologies that can make an impact? Nothing like a smartphone that could help emerging markets of 1 billion people, but, you know, ad blockers on iPhone.
Yeah, that was also weird that they announced another product that they were going to, what's it called?
Focus by Firefox, it's called.
Yes, which is an ad blocker, which, you know, is a
for Safari
market that, yes, currently only for Safari, but possibly other browsers may be supported in the future. It's an interesting change of direction. Mm. But, you know, if you take a step back and look at their mission, I guess it falls somewhere under the vast umbrella of their mission of, you know, making the web
open
and safe and all that case.
Is it really? Yeah.
Well, if you're already one of the many, many millions of people who have already sold your soul to Apple and bought an iOS device, and that's already your device of choice, you know, they've already tried to convince you to use Firefox OS phone, and, you know, that experiment has failed, so what else could they do to make your life better, given you've already made the decision to use an iOS device? Well, this is one thing that they could do. So I think it can kind of fit. It can be coerced and look like it fits under their remit, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine they must think it does, otherwise they wouldn't have bothered. I mean, they're not, they don't just do things because they, for a laugh. I mean, they, no. So yeah,
and
okay.
Firefox OS, that's, what, 3 years that's been baking, and, you know, they've had some success. There's many devices out there. There's lots of countries covered by it. There's quite a lot of developer engagement in it. So, yeah, they had some success, but they just couldn't, you know, quite crack it. So it's a shame.
So I wonder if the Firefox OS platform will live on in one guise or another, or if it will wither away like sort of WebOS did.
I have a feeling that parts of it will live on in other places, but, you know, in other products and components, it might get reused in places. But I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple of years, you know, it was just like Palm OS.
You can still run it on Android.
Well, there's that, yeah. And how long will that continue to be maintained?
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah.
It has only just been released, but it seems to be instantly shelved. It's a shame.
We'll see.
Martin? Meanwhile, from the positivity department, OwnCloud have established a community project with Western Digital to bring self-hosted cloud storage to home users. The project is to make a kit consisting of a Raspberry Pi 2, pre-installed with OwnCloud, and a 1 terabyte Western Digital hard drive. The project is currently seeking community assistance, and test devices are available for anyone wanting to get involved. Limited number, though, so if you want to get involved, sign up fast. I'll have links in the show notes. And if the project proves successful, they hope to start selling kits in early 2016.
Well, this is cool.
Isn't it?
So it's basically just a Pi and a drive and some software.
And a case.
You don't need to buy it.
Yeah, so it's everything you need to make your own cloud.
That's brilliant.
Nice.
You use own cloud, don't you, Mark?
I do. My only slight reservation about this, my first own cloud server was a plug server with a 1 terabyte hard drive plugged into it. And that 1 terabyte hard drive happened to die one day. So if you are sort of using it for... you know, having all of your stuff hosted that you can access it, then you might want something a bit more reliable than a single spinning hard drive. So I've now got...
It's cheap enough. You can have two, can't you? You can have two Raspberry Pis and two 1 terabyte hard drives.
You could, or you can have one Raspberry Pi with two... Well, I mean, yeah, something.
What, two drives attached to one machine?
Well, they're asking for community assistance to shape this project. So if you have a strong feeling that what you actually need is 2 1-terabyte drives,
well, no,
or
actually,
two
yeah,
half
I think,
terabyte drives.
Yeah, exactly. I think 2 half-terabyte drives is probably a much better solution in general. Although it does then require people to get their head around swapping out dead drives rather than buying a new device.
Oh, but this is the whole point behind this project, is to get people involved and actually shape this thing and actually come up with the ideas to how it's configured. Mark,
maybe
sounds
I should
like,
sign up.
Yeah, I think you should. I think you should.
So part two, running an Ubuntu server with ZFS, 1604 with ZFS, and you could do the whole pooling thing and, you know, pull a drive out when that could be quite a nice little project. Oh. I think come back to that in a few months' time, or maybe in a year's time, and might well be a nice little home device.
And moving on. Before we do, rumor has it that Western Digital have been reaching out to other open source projects as well, and they're looking to make other projects based around the Raspberry Pi too. So watch this space.
The Linux Homefront project of Linux/Open Source Man of the Year, Person of the Year 2015 poll, in which they thank people that haven't got the deserved popularity for the work that they do, I think.
Oh, it changed the person of the year, did it?
Yeah,
when they realised they weren't all men.
The WordPress slug is still Man of the Year, revealing what the original title was. So the nominees include Sarah Sharp, who was at Intel, I think.
Still is at Intel.
Not currently maintaining Linux.
Oh, right. Yeah, still stuff. At Intel, not doing the... Yeah. And a whole bunch of the usual suspects, apparently. I don't know quite a few of them.
Well, when I went down the list, there was only one name that stood out for me, and that was Sebastian Yogdugnu.
Stood out how?
Stood out as in I'd never heard their name, and I'd never heard of the project.
Hard to pronounce,
clearly. Everything's hard to pronounce for me. So, that was the one name I didn't recognise, and also a project I didn't recognise. And for a poll that is apparently aimed at thanking people that haven't got deserved popularity, putting in Linus Torvalds, Richard Stallman, and so on and so on, seemed a bit pointless.
It was a bit bizarre. It seemed like, you know, just a small website here or there that has a little poll on it, and it gained an awful lot of eyeballs, partially because of the fact that it was called Man of the Year. I think if this was on any other blog anywhere in the world and was not called Man of the Year with a woman listed halfway down it, nobody would give a toss. But because it did, people are now looking at this. Non-news, let's move
on.
Sorry, that's me. Jim Killock, Executive Director of the Open Rights Group, has launched an Indiegogo crowdfunder to campaign against mass surveillance in the UK. He's seeking £20,000 to challenge the Investigatory Powers Bill.
And I've backed it.
Yes, I should back that
as well. They've got up to 6,500 in 6 days, which is 32% of the goal.
And 24
and
days.
24 days.
So £1,000 a day they're on track to complete, which hopefully they will.
And this is to ensure that surveillance is only done on people who are actually suspected of doing something wrong, as opposed to everybody.
Yes, and to sort of fight this bill publicly by making appearances in the mass media in the UK in order to raise awareness about this and what it means for the everyday person, and making it understandable in terms that my mum and dad can get their heads around and things like that.
Yes, unfortunately, lobbying against stuff like this does cost quite a lot of money, and it's got to come from somewhere.
It's a flexibly funded Indiegogo, so it will only succeed, but then the degree of success is measured by how much is collected. So if you're in the UK and you don't agree with the Investigatory Powers Bill, you should probably consider backing this. You know, it's that time of the year when we all think about charities and things we want to support. Maybe this year, if you're into open source and free culture, this is something you might want to put a couple of quid towards.
And if you're in the UK and you do agree with the Investigatory Powers Bill, I suggest you go and read the Open Rights Group website.
Yes.
I thought you were going to say leave the UK for a minute there. If you're in the UK and you agree with this, get out.
All that.
Martin, moving on.
Mozilla Firefox 43 has been announced. It's due for, as we record this podcast, it's due for release hopefully tomorrow, and brings the long-awaited integration of GTK 3, among other things that are less interesting and affect other platforms.
What does GTK 3 give
well,
us?
In my mind, the only thing that GTK 3 brings that's of relevance to the Linux desktop is high DPI support.
Oh, okay. That's good, because, yeah. The high DPI support in Firefox is interesting.
It's lacking.
High DPI.
Are you alluding to it being terrible?
Yeah, well, it's sort of there, but only if you go digging around and it doesn't... Well, it does kind of scale the interface, but it's not very nice.
Is it the usual kind of, like, text is really tiny or input dialogues are massive with tiny text?
It depends on the website, and you have to go around digging in... about config and know that it's there to look for and what you're looking for and so on. And it's a really...
What's high DPI defined as?
Like, you 4K. Know, like your screen on your fancy laptop has really high resolution, even though it's not very big. So it's got a high pixel density. DPI is dots per inch.
So over some kind of threshold.
Oh, yeah. I guess it's more than... Well... I don't know.
More than at the point where it looks rubbish. that seems to be the definition, because people... It's like this vague, hand-wavy... I'm sure there is, like, you know, the Apple fans have got their branded, like, Retina display. Yeah. So it's that kind of thing. It's like, you know, anything that's higher than full HD on a, you know, reasonable size screen.
And what does GTK do to make... I mean, why doesn't that work...
So you end up with, if you've got a really super high resolution display, then you can end up with tiny, tiny, tiny text or dialogues that are really hard to hit because, you know, they're really small, and fields that it's really hard to see what you're typing in, and they don't scale properly. And there are not many platforms that do very well, to be honest.
And GTK 3 has that scaling built in, including sort of handles pixel doubling in a nice sort of anti-aliased fashion.
Yes.
Right.
So
I think that might be...
Shall we move on?
Yeah, I think that might be all the news we have time for.
And it's time for some bumper community news and events. And up first is a blog post from Will Cook, where he announced that online searches in the Ubuntu Dash will be switched off by default in 16.04.
That's interesting.
Yes.
So when you search for something, it only searches your computer?
Yes. So the original plan was that the dash, the thing when you hit the super key or the Windows key or the Ubuntu button in the top left-hand corner of the screen, the dash would appear, and that would be your central search place for everything. And some people don't like that. They would rather it didn't send any key presses online anywhere and would rather it stayed locally unless you opt in. And 16.04 has been changed so that will be the case. It will be... a local only in 16.04 for a default install. And if you turn on online searches, so let's say, for example, you want to be able to search Wikipedia and Reddit and all the other online sources as well as locally, if you turn that on, it will only turn on the non-commercial ones like Reddit and Wikipedia. It won't switch on things like, you know, the online stores that it would search as well. Mm. You have to explicitly turn those on.
I wonder if this will make the local searching any quicker. Because
that's a good point.
The slightly sort of incongruous thing I notice when I use the dash is that it always gets online results before it gets local results. At least this won't give. Yeah, if online results aren't there at all, then you won't notice it. But
is that Amazon's hard drives are faster than yours? So yeah, that landed as we're recording this Tuesday 15th. It landed today.
Mm. Oh really? Oh, that soon? Okay. Yeah. And also, yes. The music store is going to be removed completely from 16.04 onwards as well.
Yeah, the 7 Digital branded. Yeah. So if you searched and found music and clicked through, you'd end up at 7 Digital. That's all being removed as well.
And what will be its replacement?
there won't be a replacement. There isn't a plan to replace the music store on 1604 with anything else.
So it won't return music results, you mean?
Yes. Yes, that's right. It will return local music. So if you've got tracks on your local machine in your music folder or whatever, it'll return those. But it won't go off and query online sources
and
for that kind of stuff.
If you're upgrading from 1404 to 1604, none of these changes will be applied automatically. So if you're doing a distribution upgrade, it will still search online by default if you've upgraded from 1404 to 1604, but you can go in and turn those things off.
Actually, I think if you haven't touched it, it will switch it off. But if you have fiddled with it, then it respects whatever setting you had it set to. But if you don't touch it, it changes the default. Right. I think that's the idea. But it only landed today, and someone's going to have to test that process to figure out exactly what happens. But I think that's the general idea. Yeah. Moving on, the Ubuntu Touch LibreOffice Doc Viewer has been released and put into the store. So now if you're using an Ubuntu phone and you install the Doc Viewer, you can open common LibreOffice documents in the Doc Viewer.
Nice. Is this an official thing from LibreOffice themselves, or is this something a community person has done?
It's a community-maintained application. So a couple of community developers worked on this, Stefano and Roman. We worked with a guy called Bjorn who works for us, but works also for the Document Foundation.
Oh, right.
So, they know about it. And we're using something called LibreOffice Kit, which is, the ability to run LibreOffice headless. You actually do get a cut down version of LibreOffice in this application. So the application's quite big. It's like 66 meg or something like that because there's LibreOffice in there.
Yeah.
And it launches LibreOffice in the background, renders the document, and then displays it on the screen.
Nice.
It works really well. Surprisingly well, actually, on low-end phones. So, yeah, it's pretty good.
Cool. There's also UPebble, a Pebble Watch app for Ubuntu Touch.
Yahoo!
Yes, from 50% of us who have Pebble Watches, this is welcome news, yes.
So pleased about this.
So what is this going to let you do to your Pebble Watch?
So the way people use Pebble Watches is they get notifications, the same kind of notifications you get on your phone, on the front screen of your phone, like calendar notifications, tweets, Facebooks, or whatever like you have coming up on the front page of your Android phone typically, or iOS device. Those kind of things pop up on your watch. So you don't have to take your phone out of your pocket. Your wrist vibrates and you just look at your watch and there you see the notification. But it also it's a bit richer than that. It's got stuff like you can reply, or you can force the app to open on the phone so you can then reply on the phone later, or you can even, I think in some apps you can reply via audio message through, because the watch actually has a microphone on it, so you can do your Dick Tracy calling all cars straight into your watch.
Who's Dick Tracy?
The only feature that I use on the Android integration that isn't present in this initial version of UPebble for the Ubuntu Touch, but all of the other interactions with notifications appears to be there, so I'm really pleased about this.
And it's also got calendar as well, so you can press a button on your, if you want to just see what you've got going on that day, in the morning, you just press one button on your phone and you can scroll down through all of your meetings or events or birthdays or whatever stuff you've got that day. I really, really like the Pebble Watch, and it's under active development. There was an update sent out today, about an hour ago, to the Pebble itself that adds better health monitoring stuff, so it monitors your steps and your exercise and sleep patterns and all that kind of stuff. If you want to do that, you can turn it on or off. But there's loads of apps. There's a little Pebble app store, and you can get different watch faces and all kinds of funky stuff. So yeah, it's really quite nice to see that it's community maintained. Mm-hmm. Michael Zanetti, who is a machine and able to create apps in whatever spare time, I don't know where he gets his spare time, but he creates loads of these apps, and yeah, look forward to it continuing.
Cool.
And the final bit of community news is a member of the community, Sturmflut, who I believe is listening live right now, is working with Thomas Voss on getting FM radio support enabled in the Ubuntu phone.
Oh, nice. So do the phones that it's on have FM tuners already?
Some of them do. Mm. And we just don't have the features enabled in the platform, and there's no app that does it.
Yeah.
So he's been doing a lot of research trying to get that fixed. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Mm. It's a shame. It's a feature which seemed to be in a lot of smartphones when the first sort of big wave of Android phones was about, and then it's sort of been taken out as, I guess, phone carriers want people to spend their money
on
streaming
data. Oh, you cynic.
Streaming internet radio.
I don't know. FM, I think I used FM radio on my phone maybe once or twice years and years and years ago on a Nokia N82, and never since, just because I'm never in a situation where there isn't a radio nearby that I could use. Like in my house, there's radios. In my car, there's a radio. When I used to commute on the train, I might do it, but then it would cut out and the reception was terrible. So it was never really super useful for me. But I'm sure some people in like metropolitan areas, it's like if they're walking to and from work, it might be nice to listen to the radio in the morning. And it's nice to see people getting on and helping fix that.
Yeah.
We also have some events.
We do have some events. The first event is the Egham Raspberry Jam gamification. The 10th Egham Raspberry Jam, in fact, which is at Gartner offices in Surrey on Sunday, the 17th of January 2016, between 2 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And the idea here is you bring along all things to do with gaming hooked up to a Raspberry Pi so that you can show them off, or show off a project you've created, or show something that you've made with your Christmas present, perhaps. We'll have links in the show notes for that.
Quite fancy going to that, actually. I might have to make something over Christmas and then take it along.
Mm.
We also have an event on January 21st to the 24th, Scale 14X, which is at Pasadena Convention Center, California. And I'm going. Yay! It's the largest community-run open source and free software conference in North America. And attached to it is an UbuCon Summit, which we'll link to a blog post with more details about. It's a bit like a UDS, but without the development planning stuff, more of the workshops
community
and
stuff.
Sessions and community conversations and stuff. I'll link to a blog post about that.
Cool. We also have FOSDEM 2016. FOSDEM is a free and non-commercial event organized by the community for the community, and you get all sorts of open source projects there, running tracks on various languages and bits of software and all sorts of other open source related topics, and it's brilliant. And it's in Belgium, so they have nice beer.
Yes, it's good as FOSDEM.
Yeah.
Are you going?
No. I've used up all my holiday.
Oh yeah.
That is in Brussels in Belgium from the 30th to the 31st of January, and there's usually lots of sort of fringe events going on around it during the run-up as well. That's over a weekend.
Cool. And then there's LinuxConf AU 2016, and it's the largest Linux and open source conference in the Asia Pacific region, and it's in Geelong in Victoria, Australia, between the 1st and 5th of February at Deakin University's waterfront campus. Has anyone been to that?
No, it's one I've always wanted to go to, though. There's like,
it's one I've always wanted to send Martin.
Nick, who helped us out while Laura was away, is going because he lives in Geelong.
Oh, wow. Well,
that's convenient, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it? And finally, we've got DevConf CZ 2016, which is a free annual developer conference for all Linux and JBoss community developers, admins, and Linux users. It's organized by Red Hat Czech Republic in cooperation with the Fedora and JBoss communities, and it's in Brno, the Czech Republic, from February the 5th to the 7th, 2016.
Cool.
Lots of events.
Yeah.
And that's all of the community news and events.
We love getting your feedback, so please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh. If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, but please no essays, email us on show@ubuntupodcast.org. If you'd like to discuss some of the things we talk about with other listeners, post on our shiny new subreddit at reddit.com/r/ubuntupodcast, or you can just leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, ubuntupodcast.org.
That's all for episode 41. We'll be back next week for the last show of the season, where we'll be making our predictions for 2016 and seeing how wrong we were about our predictions for 2015.
Yes, he's and also thinking. Some community people, some of our listeners mentioned some as well. We'll have to go over some of those as well.
Cool. Well, hope anyone who was listening live to this experimental live episode enjoyed it.
And heard it.
Yes, and keep listening as well for the next one.
Oh, yeah, do.
Yeah. Goes out. Yes. Soon.
Shortly.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
And stop recording.